on 2FM with Green Farm. Get real with Green Farm's chicken and turkey range. Real protein, real tasty. Game on, weeknights from 6 on 2FM.
Thanks to the two Johnnies for keeping us entertained for the afternoon. It's Tuesday the 5th of April and this is Game On. Coming up today, as the Irish contingent ready to tee off at Augusta, Tiger confirms he's ready to.
You've said countless times throughout your career that you don't enter a golf tournament unless you think that you can win it. So the question is simple. Do you think you can win the Masters this week?
I do.
After news today of Dan Levy's untimely retirement from rugby, Stephen Ferris is with us to look back on his short but very successful career.
Oh, and now Levy, beautifully done. Levy with a run for the line. The little pass. The dexterous pass from James Ryan. Again, the hands of a pianist. And a wonderfully worked try for Levy and for Leinster.
It's also quarter-final time in the Champions League. Mark Langdon is standing by ahead of big nights for Liverpool and Man City. All that, plus we've another copy of FIFA 2022 to give away. If you want to get in touch, you can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
It's some week in sport, Marie, isn't it?
Yeah, I spent the day actually just sitting down on the couch watching the Masters coverage on Sky Golf, and it was brilliant.
I know it was. Mind you, Tiger's fairly optimistic. I was looking at the television watching Tiger thinking, I thought I moved poorly.
Yeah,
I watched him.
Yeah, he doesn't look like. Do you know what it was when they actually showed like replays of him winning the Masters? I think that then that really showed up what he's like now. But he's getting older. He does have those new shoes on. Actually, he's not wearing the Nike ones anymore. So I'm curious about them and what benefit they are. Maybe when we're talking to Gary Murphy a bit later, he might tell us.
Even speed of movement, his agility. You got to love his ambition to think he's going to win the Masters the way he's pottering around. Maybe he's going to take off tomorrow afternoon.
But what was he going to say, like, if he was asked? I mean, if it was you, like, what would you say? Because you'd have, I'm sure, a quite similar mentality to him. If somebody asks you, are you going to win, even though you might not 100% think so, would you ever give that impression?
Yeah, I'd probably have given a short and curt an answer as Tiger gave. But would you expect people to believe you? That's the other part.
Yeah, well, I think when it's Tiger, though, like, you always have some sort of expectation that he can pull something unbelievable out of the bag.
Yeah, true.
Even given everything that's happened to him, because he's obviously done it before and he knows the golf course so well. And he's not under the pressure that the rest of them are under, because the expectation isn't as great on him.
No. Do you believe in fairy tales?
I do, because of Tiger's previous fairy tale and the fact that he's had a redemption already. Why can't he have two?
A miracle and a fairy tale.
There you go. I like that. Look, you're writing the headlines now for the journalists for the end of the weekend.
Well, I'm telling you, I have them all drummed up. Come on, we have a competition. What is it?
So, Dublin artist Aches has teamed up with EA Sports to create an exclusive Dublin City kit for FIFA 22. Known for his murals and graffiti, Aches moves from street to football by designing a unique kit bringing Dublin to life in-game. This limited edition vanity kit is now available in FIFA Ultimate Team. To celebrate its release, we have a copy of FIFA 22 to give away each day this week. Not only that, but one of our five daily winners will get their own signed limited edition Aches jersey. Aches City jersey. To be with a chance to win today and get in the draw, all you have to do is answer the following question.
I just realised I probably added another 20 to FIFA 22 in the intro as I read it there now. It's not a date, it's an actual game. But the question is, which Portuguese side play Liverpool in the Champions League tonight? You will get the answer if you listen long enough to the show. Text your answer, your name and your number, name of your club even, to 51552. As always, RTE competitions, terms and conditions apply. See 2fm.ie for details.
Very good.
What are the usual terms and conditions, Marie?
You're not a big computer game fanatic?
No. I used to be.
Did you?
Yeah.
Never told me that before.
Sorry, Marie. I should have told you when I met you. I used to play computer games.
I'm just given all the conversations we've had over the last 3 years. This is new information.
That I used to play computer games. Yeah, it's a fascinating one.
What were you playing?
FIFA 12, probably. Nine. Right. Seven. That's like the only time you think, if I go back far enough, which one will I get to?
Okay, let's move on to the golf. Gary Murphy is standing by to take us through what could potentially happen over the next week or so. Gary, how are you?
I'm very well, Maureen, yourself?
Oh, great. I was saying to Ruby at the start of the show, I had a brilliant day just sitting on the couch watching all of the Masters coverage on Sky Golf. And it was pretty fascinating because, as you probably saw a lot of it as well, every single interview that was going on had the person like Rory or John Rahm or whoever been interviewed, but on a little side screen every time was what Tiger was up to. So you got your Tiger cam and you got your interview with the golfer, and I'd imagine that's probably set the tone now for what the rest of the, well, when it does kick off, what it's going to be like.
Yeah, I think the players will probably be looking forward to getting going because, you know, they're just deflecting questions about Tiger the whole time. You're in there to do your presser and, you know, everyone just wants to know about Tiger. It's, I mean, the crowds yesterday were insane, really. It was, Tiger jokingly said they're all there following Freddie, but it's an amazing story from, you know, a near-death experience 14 months ago to be ready to win the Masters, potentially, because that's what he's there for. He's not there to stroll around. He's obviously prepped really well. He feels his game is confident enough to get him in the mix, and then once you get in the mix of these things, it's all down to the emotion of the situation. But, I just think it's fabulous to see him back. He brings a whole new dynamic, to any tournament he ever plays. And with his history around there, I was chatting to a pal of mine this morning. He was, saying when Jack won when he was 46, he wasn't really playing a lot of golf either. And, for these great champions at a venue they're so familiar with, it's totally different to him, I think, coming over to play at Royal St. George's or something like that. So it's very exciting. I think it just brings a whole new dynamic. And plus, I think it also takes a lot of pressure off the favourites, because it's not really... Like, Rory's going for the Grand Slam, and it's hardly even been mentioned. So some of them will probably enjoy that, but it's just great to see him back.
Well, Greg Allen is standing by at Augusta for us. Greg, what's the hype like? No, we don't have Greg. We'll have to go back to him very, very shortly.
I think there's poor coverage in Augusta. Phone line must have been down.
There's not much hype, is there?
Yeah, that much hype. There's no phone coverage. But I know, Gary, look, we heard Tiger earlier ask the question, is he there to win? Of course he is. Does he think he can win? I do. And you mentioned Jack winning at a 46. But did Jack Nicklaus have the physical injuries through his career that Tiger Woods has had? Did he smash his leg in a car crash? Has he had the knee surgery, the back surgery? My memory of Jack Nicklaus as an old man was still a pretty nimble one. My memory of Tiger Woods at 46 or whatever age he is now is not that nimble.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know as well as anyone, Ruby, you've had a lot of broken bones. That normally doesn't happen to most golfers. He obviously got injured through the gym, through trying to be a Navy SEAL and all of that, and it was kind of a domino effect. So I'm sure he's on a cocktail of painkillers or anti-inflammatories most of the time. But I just think being the guy and the player that he is, he wouldn't be there if he didn't think he was going to compete. His swing looks fantastic. I mean, it looks as good. It's obviously a little different. It's not as dynamic as it was in 97, because further time takes care of that. But it looks very controlled. His speed is not that much of a factor because he has plenty of it. It's more of guile around there, and his iron play it's what's going to set him apart. There's so many similarities with him and Ben Hogan and the car crash and the fairy tale of 2019, like, this would completely usurp any of that if he's going to win, so
it surely would. But it's also a slightly different Augusta. It's longer, the greens are larger and flatter. Is it going to suit the big bombing players more so than what we're traditionally used to at Augusta?
No, not really. Well, the weather is a factor. Like, it's very wet there at the moment, and it's thundery, and there's a lot of rain forecast this evening. There's a bit of rain tomorrow, and the sub air will help a good bit of that, but it's going to be windy. Like, the rain's no factor at all. The rain, if it rained for 4 days and wasn't windy, the course would play easy. But it's going to be breezy on Thursday, and that's going to suit, the really good strokes gained guys, tee to green, you know, because you're going to have to be able to control your ball, and the guys, the better iron players are you know, going to have a bigger advantage of that. I think it's going to suit Shane massively, because that's probably the best part of his game at the moment. But there's just so many, like, the reason it's enthralling this year is there's so many guys that can win it. You know, more so, I know golf is very deep at the moment, but, you know, there's guys coming back with good records. There's guys like Scottie Scheffler coming in, you know, hot as hell. With the, you know, he's only played there twice, but he's had two top 20s. He's got a, you know, a famous, you know, you talk about Tiger and Jack Nicklaus and their knowledge of Augusta National. Like, Ted Scott has caddied with Bubba around there. He's won twice. Bones McKay is with Justin Thomas, you know, who was around there with Mickelson, I don't know, probably 25 times. So there's lots of storylines. You've got Brooks Koepka. Can he get back to win the majors? And then the emotional side, can Rory win the Grand Slam? Is John Rahm going to add to his? He's a little bit out of form. Can, you know, all these guys can turn up at any given week and deliver. It's just who's going to do it is the million-dollar question.
So there are lots of storylines, loads of fascinating encounters going to happen on the course over the next while. But what's the hype like, Greg Allen?
It is extraordinary. It's like nobody else is playing in the golf tournament, and we don't even know yet if Tiger Woods is going to play in the golf tournament, because for almost all of yesterday, certainly today, when he made his announcement that as of right now he's going to play, Tiger Woods has just been the story and will continue to be the story when he tees it up on Thursday. I don't think it's a case of if. I doubt very much he's going to change his mind, or I don't think he's going to change between now and Thursday when he's due to tee off just after 3:30 Irish time. And I think that Tiger Woods is ready to win here. Whether he will win or not is another question, because he's very clear about one thing. He wouldn't be here if he didn't think he had a chance of winning. He's not here to finish tied 40th. Now, I think he was tied 38th the last tournament he played in, which incidentally was the Masters in 2020. And that's an indicator, really, that, you know, is he the golfer capable of winning it at 46? Certainly we saw it at 43 in 2019, but that was Tiger before the accident. But Gary makes a really good point about Ben Hogan. And Ben Hogan is, you know, arguably, alongside Nicklaus and Tiger Woods, the greatest player ever to play the game, certainly since the Second World War. And Ben Hogan had a horrific car crash as well, threw himself across his wife, Valerie, saved her life in the course of an oncoming Greyhound bus crashing straight into his car. His legs had to be wrapped in bandages for the rest of his career. And 16 months after that, he won the US Open at Merion in 1950. It's one of the most iconic major championship victories of all time. And the one iron or two iron that it was that he hit into 18 to seal the deal is one of the most iconic shots of all time. And Tiger views himself as being the best of all time, I think. Certainly he regards himself as being the player that is the type of guy who can do what Ben Hogan did. And indeed what Jack Nicklaus did, although not with injuries. But Jack Nicklaus's victory in 1986 came on the back of no form whatsoever to speak of. So who's to say that on the golf course that produces the most multiple winners of any major golf championship, those who have done it before around Augusta know what it takes, but also, as Padraig Harrington will tell you, it's a mental game around here. If you get yourself into position on Sunday, it's amazing what the power of a strong mind can have. Just so long as Tiger's legs are strong enough, his game is good enough, because he's certainly not able to... He's not in any way compromised swing-wise. His swing is really, really good. Brandel Chambly of the Golf Channel here is one of the most regarded analysts of golf swings. Was looking yesterday at Tiger's swing, and he says it might just be in the best place it's been in the last 10 years. So his swing is good. Tiger said swinging the golf club isn't an issue. Walking the course is an issue. And that is the issue, to what degree the swelling after each round, the pain that he has to go through during the round, distracts him. But I think he believes he can win, and I don't think he's just telling himself that just for some notion that he's trying to cod himself. I really think he believes he can win, and he will tee it up on Thursday.
Okay, well, he definitely is sounding confident. Let's hear from him.
Well, as of right now, I feel like I am going to play. As of right now, I'm going to play 9 more holes tomorrow. My recovery has been good. I've been very excited about how I've recovered each and every day, and that's been the challenge. That's why I came up here and tested out for 27 holes, because we played the par 3 course. Charlie couldn't help himself. So was able to play 27 holes that day, and at home testing it. But it's the recovery, you know, how am I going to get all and swelling out and recover for the next day. And my team has been fantastic and worked very hard. So we've got another day of 9 more holes, and then come game time.
You've said countless times throughout your career that you don't enter a golf tournament unless you think that you can win it. Mm-hmm. So the question is simple. Do you think you can win the Masters this week?
I do.
And what have you seen in your preparation that leads you to believe that?
Well, I can hit it just fine. And I don't have any qualms about what I can do physically from a golf standpoint. It's now walking's the hard part. You know, this is normally not a easy walk to begin with. Now, given the conditions that, you know, my leg is in, it gets a little more difficult. And, you know, that's, 72 holes is a long road. And it's going to be a tough challenge, and a challenge that I'm up for.
Gary, I know from riding injured, hurt, dehydrated, tired, fatigued, adrenaline can get you a hell of a long way.
Yeah.
What's adrenaline in golf? Is it a good thing or a bad thing?
There's sometimes when you're injured playing golf, you seem to have a little more acceptance. You don't try, you know, they say like beware the injured golfer. If you're a little sick or under the weather or whatever, your expectations are normal a little bit. And at times you have a tendency to play within yourself and not take on too much because you don't feel, you know, quite right to do it, which is not a bad thing to have around there. The only worry I would have for him weather-wise, if the weather went against them and they got flooded and maybe rounds overlapped a bit as they did at the Players, and then he might have to play 27 holes or, you know, close to 36 holes in one day, that's going to be a major problem for him. But no, the fact that he'll play within himself, you can see that in the temper of his swing. There'll be very few drivers that, you know, he'll be going after. He won't be 100% at stuff. He's still got plenty of speed from seeing him on Sunday and yesterday. You know, distance is not going to be a factor. But I think at times when you're just not quite right, it's not a bad thing for golf. It's obviously different for rugby or soccer or jumping fences and Cheltenham at 40 miles an hour, but it's not the worst thing in the world for golf.
Greg, if I was to give you a choice of who was going to play well, Rory or Tiger, who would you pick?
I give Rory the nod every time. I mean, Rory McIlroy is a player in his prime and maybe a little bit off what he was in, you know, 2011 when he was just winning US Opens by 8 strokes, and he's got a lot of, I suppose, what you'd call scar tissue around here. There's no question about that. But he is a player who's one of the top players in the world, number 9 in the world. Tiger Woods is something like 970-something in the world. And although he has been what he has been over the years, Tiger Woods is coming in here 14 months after having a car crash, where he had to have a discussion with doctors about whether he was going to lose his leg or not. I think Tiger is possibly superhuman. It was somebody who said once upon a time that, you know, if you open Tiger Woods, he's all wires and levers because he's a machine. But that was back then. This is not Tiger now. He's a man with multiple back surgeries, knee surgeries, and now, you know, a lower leg, which is never going to be the same again. There's so much metal in it. The one thing I've noticed, and I think anybody who's been watching the pictures here, Tiger doesn't walk the way he used to walk. He probably never will walk the way he used to walk. There are so many components in his lower leg that are just not natural. They're metal. It's a stiff walk. But everything else from the knee up is okay, it seems. And maybe the 14 months have seen other injuries recover even more than they had recovered prior to the accident. And I think all he's concerned about is walking. I don't think he's concerned about how he can play the game. And then it comes down to how strong his mind is. And we know how strong his mind is. It all has to come together for him, of course. He's got to get off to a good start. He's got to not suffer too much pain at the end of each round. Because if he makes the cut, it's 4 consecutive rounds on a deceptively hilly course. Those TV pictures don't show you anything like it. But look, this is a guy who won the US Open in 2008. With a lot of pain. You know, he had an ACL rupture and also a stress fracture in his leg. People say he won the US Open on a broken leg. It was a stress fracture. So he knows what it's like to win under pain. And I don't think there's probably any sportsman in the world who's endured the amount of pain he has endured and still won. So he thinks this is just another challenge, the biggest challenge of all. But that's what I think he's framing this in his own mind as. And I really think he thinks he can win.
Well, maybe he can. Hopefully he will. But Rory, or Gary, we do have four Irish golfers: Seamus Power, Rory McIlroy, Shane Lowry, Paul Carrington. Rory's coming in here off the back of the Texas Open, which he didn't really get much out of, did he?
No, he didn't. And I wouldn't be too bothered. You know, it's a missed cut. It's not ideal preparation. Rory, at the moment, you kind of just, you know, I really fancied him earlier in the year. I've gone off him a little bit, but in the precocious talent that he is, he could turn up, and he has that. The reason he's so fascinating is he has that ability to turn up and blow fields away. It doesn't happen very often at Augusta. It's generally a tight tournament on a Sunday, apart from 97, obviously. But it's just, as it always is with Rory at a major, you know, historically, 15 out of the last 16 years, the winners come from within four shots of the first round. Rory has to get off to a decent start, more so just to get his juices flowing and get straight into the tournament. He needs a positive vibe straight away. I don't know what we're going to get with Rory. I think Shane is probably the favourites of the Irish. Obviously, it's an amazing performance for Seamus Power to get there, but it is his first Masters, and it's 1979, which is a while ago since a rookie has won it. So the odds are stacked against Seamus. But listen, it's about getting in there and getting to know the place, and it might be his year this year, but if he can get in and have four rounds and just get a great buzz out of the week. And it's fabulous to see Harrington back as well. You know, it's Porg is obviously running out of time. He had a brilliant week last week on the Champions Tour, but he's 51 this year. So, you know, it's not ceremonial for Harrington. He's a bit like Woods. He'll be thinking he can win it too, and he's got a decent early draw, and you never know, he get off to a hot start. We saw at the USPGA that he's still capable of contending in these tournaments. So I think it's just brilliant to see four Irish there, and all, you know, all with great chances to have very exciting weeks.
Greg, Rory was asked in his press conference today about the differences on hole 11 and 15, and it was quite interesting hearing him speaking about it. Is there much talk about the changes?
Yeah, 11 is obviously one of the most difficult holes on the golf course. It's a downhill par 4. It's 520 yards, which I think is actually longer than the par 5 13th, which gives you some intention, I suppose, or indication as to how long it is. But the 11th hole has had a gap in the trees to the right-hand side, from where actually Tiger Woods hit an extraordinary iron shot in the final round in 2019. And that gap in the trees should never really have been there. And they've done a little bit of contouring of the fairway. They've lengthened it by 15 yards. And it now is a hole which is substantial. Well, it's certainly more difficult. How substantially more difficult it is, because it's the most difficult, second most difficult hole on the golf course in any case. So that is a much more trying hole. And I think because it comes right at the start of Amen Corner as well, and the 10th hole before it is no bargain. So that's 11, which is going to be a 520 yard par 4, which is toughened up because of the way they've contoured the fairway and planted new trees, a couple of new trees. But also 15. 15 is a hole where so many Masters have been decided. Firethorn, it's called. It's a what was a 525 yard par 5. And with being hit with 8 irons and 7 irons, and in some case 9 irons in the last few years for second shots on a par 5, which is a huge advantage on that hole because it's a shallow green. And if you can go in there with a short iron from and the ball comes down dropping very steeply, you can hold the green very much more easily than you can if you're 25 yards further back. So that tee box going back to 550 yards will just make players think twice about going for the green, because it's not a bargain at all to go for that green with a shot that goes over the back of the green, because you're arguably better off 80 to 90 yards short of the green going over the water to the flag than you are over the back, because at least the green slopes towards the fairway, whereas if you go over the back, you're chipping onto a green that's like a marble surface going all the way down to the water hazard at the front. So that little change of yardage on 15 is going to make it a hole which is one that will make players think twice about how to go for the green in two, or whether they will go for the green in two.
15 could create some great drama late on Sunday afternoon by the sounds of it then, Greg. But Gary, you've mentioned a lot of players. We've talked about Tiger on the comeback, but there's another former world number one starting to show signs of a resurgence in Dustin Johnson.
He is. He's had a quiet time at the start of the year. He obviously finished brilliantly at the Players' Championship, finished at 63, and was very impressive at the match play. And he, obviously, former champion in 2020, was a different venue, or not a different venue, but a different test. I think he's fascinating, and like all of them, I really buy into the fact that Thursday is almost as important a day as Sunday can be around here. They all need to get into contention. It's not such a difficult course to backdoor a top 10, you know, but they're not there. There's none of these guys there for top 10s, really. So it's getting off to a fast start. He's got an excellent course record around here, obviously, with the win, but form is important going into these terms, so they're not denying that, and he has found a little bit of that. Whether he can get back to that, you know, top end that he was at a couple of years ago, I'm not quite sure. But then he looked amazing at the Ryder Cup last year, so maybe he's getting a little flatter in smaller events and preparing himself better for major events, because that's essentially what will be judged on. He does have a Hall of Fame career to date, but he's an interesting one, Johnson.
Greg, you've been out and about on the course. Has anyone taken your fancy?
It's funny, I had a conversation with Paul McGinley about this just a little while ago, and you know, when you ask someone who's done as much research as Paul McGinley has done for his Sky commentary and his work here on the Golf Channel, and he couldn't really put a finger on anybody because he thinks it's just so open. However, I really think Dustin Johnson might just be in the right little bit of form, putting well enough again. This, when he won in November of 2020, okay, it was a time of year where Augusta played very differently to the way it's going to play in April. But there was something about him then which I think is still in his game, and it's just resurfaced after a bit of a lull. And I actually think Dustin Johnson has a great chance. But if I was going to put some money on somebody right now, if he can get over his Players' Championship success, you know, not seeing his family for 2 years and then seeing them at the Players' Championship and then winning, Cameron Smith has everything to win at Augusta. He was second to Johnson in the tied for runner-up spot back in 2020, and I think he is the man for me. What few little euro I have will go on Cam Smith.
Well, Greg is rolling in with Cameron Smith. Gary, where are you going to? What direction are you pushing us in?
My pick of the favourites was very much between Justin Thomas and Brooks Koepka, but I'm going to go with Brooks Koepka. I think he's... if he can putt anything like he has done in his major wins, his ball striking has improved a lot this season. He looked very good at the match play, granted in fits and starts, but he does have that steel. He's got a brilliant record around here. I wouldn't worry about the missed cut last year because he was kind of tigerish. He was coming back from injury and he wasn't fit. But in five starts, as you kind of count for last year, really, he's had two top tens. He had a second place in 2019, and he will be desperately keen to try out to his four majors.
That will be very interesting. Greg, I hope you enjoy Augusta. Gary Murphy, thanks for taking the call. We're going to take a quick break.
RTE 2FM.
Game on
2FM with Green Farm. Rise and grind and the hustle mindset aren't real. The protein in our chicken and turkey is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back to Game On with me, Marie Crowe. I'm joined by Ruby Walsh, and we are now going to turn our attention to rugby. So a little bit earlier, Leinster announced that Dan Levy was retiring with immediate effect after further complications from the knee injury he suffered in 2019. There was a huge outpouring of sadness because Dan Levy is only 27 years of age, and we haven't seen him play for quite some time, but in the years that he did play, he left a real lasting impact on everybody that watched him. And just to talk through the career that he had, albeit a short one, we are joined now by Stephen Ferris. Stephen, just first of all, why do you think people are so impacted by Dan Levy retiring at 27?
Marie, I think, first of all, because he was such an unbelievable player. First and foremost, the talent that he had, the physicality that he showed every time he took the pitch. And, he wore his heart on his sleeve. He's one of those players that, you know, just epitomised everything good about Leinster and about Irish rugby. And it's a weird one because he was a fan's favourite. And it's not really that you get a back rower who's, you know, a fan's favourite week in and week out. And he certainly was that. And I think when somebody gets injured, I only know too well, you know, having my own setbacks throughout the career. You know, you want to make a comeback, and you want to come back, you know, better than you were before. And unfortunately for Dan, you know, that didn't happen. He came back, and you know, straight away people were going, "Geez, you know, Dan needs to get another few games under his belt. He's, you know, getting back to full fitness." And I think everybody will forget about the last kind of few games that he played for Leinster and remember all the unbelievable games that he had in Europe and playing, you know, a limited number of caps for Ireland. But you know, any time he pulled on the jersey when he was fully fit, he was without a shadow of a doubt one of the best back rowers in world rugby. And you know, I think that's testament to the young man.
I think as well, Stephen, because we saw a little bit of the rehab he was doing through social media. You know, we'd get some updates and everybody knew how hard he was working and how much he wanted it. And like, he was 27 when 27 now when he's retired. So like, he would have been 24, 25 when that first injury came in 2019, and it was just before the World Cup. But just because we got that little bit of insight to how hard he worked to get back that time, and obviously it didn't work out, I think that as well probably just made people feel so sorry for him after putting in all that work.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, everybody is certainly feeling sorry for him. I think as you say, the social media has went absolutely crazy with Dan Levy's name today, and rightly so, and everybody remembering the good times that he gave us all. And like, I know what's probably going on inside Dan's head. Even when he came back, he probably knew that he wasn't 100% right. Even the amount of rehab and everything that he'd done, and the knee probably felt good at times. And then when you get back into that match situation, you know it's just not 100% right. Maybe it was 100% right, and he did suffer another couple of setbacks, and you know, the time wasn't right. But you know, when you suffer such a big injury like that, it really is a tough ask to come back and pick up where you left off. And unfortunately for Dan, he wasn't able to do that. And like, even after, after his first injury, I sent him a message. Obviously, I've been in a very similar position to his, and just sent him a message. Says, "Look, if you ever need somebody to have a chat with, or you know, I know there can be some pretty dark days when you're going through rehab, and you still find yourself in that rehab group, and players are coming and going, like guys are rupturing ACLs, and you know, after 7, 8, 9 months are back in the pitch, and you're still in that rehab group, it can get you down." But you know, he responded to him, "Thank you so much, Dave. We really appreciate it, and I'm really excited about getting stuck into the rehab." And I think that just shows what the man is all about. He never shied away from doing the hard yards on and off the pitch, and I'm sure he'd give it absolutely everything to get the rehab right, to make sure his knee was fully right, to come back and give it a good shot to see if he could still play professional rugby. But unfortunately, Marie, he's had to hang up the boots, and you know, your health comes first, and that's priority over everything.
But Stephen, that is the other side of sport, the dark side, the hard part, dealing with injuries. I mean, 2019 gets back in 2020, 3 months more surgery. I think it shows the capacity of his mental attitude to say that he did get back to play 7 games. I know for spending 3, 4, 5 months injured, but that length of time injured, it's incredible.
Yeah, it's like, you know yourself, Ruby, you've been there. Like, I sat in the Shelburne Hotel with you when you had a cage around your leg, like, and you were, you know, fighting back to try and get back from injury. And you could see in the distance, you know, there was light at the end of the tunnel. And, you know, for Dan, there was that light at the end of the tunnel. But now that, you know, that tunnel's now locked up, and he's got to move on, and he's got to look at the next part of his life. You know, rugby is now in the past. Well, for him, playing professional rugby is now in the past. So if he adopts the same attitude and the same enthusiasm and the same hard work to whatever he does in the coming months and years, he will surely succeed, because he's an absolute warrior. And you know what, Ruby, you know yourself, in sport, being a good guy and being a gentleman goes a long, long way, and he certainly has the respect from all his peers and former players that he played with.
He seems to have reading the eulogies about him on everywhere today. I mean, it wasn't a bad word said about Dan Levy. But what does a rugby player do now, Stephen? He's 27. He's given 7 years of his life as a professional rugby player, 3 years of that trying to recover from injury. What does he do tomorrow?
That's a good question. One that I don't have an answer for. you either get away from it, you take yourself off, you go on holiday with your missus or family or whatever, get your head charged, get away from the game. All anybody has been asking him for the last 2-3 years of his career is, when are you coming back? When are you coming back? He goes to visit a corporate box at the Aviva Stadium, or he goes to do a little bit of work around the RDS on match night. All he's getting is, when are you coming back? When are you coming back? And sometimes you just need to get away from it, and he might do that. I don't know if he's into coaching, if he works with any young kids, or he wants to get into the professional side of the coaching setup. I know he mentioned that Leo Cullen has been a really good mentor for him the whole way throughout his career, but even more so during this injury. That's a shoulder to lean on for sure. But I know for one thing, Ruby will have the support of everybody around him. In the rugby circles or out of the rugby circles, and you know, if he ever needs any advice or tips from up here in the north, he can certainly give me a shout, because I think we'll all be more than happy to give him a hand.
Yeah,
I think that's a message that was easily heard today, Marie, wasn't it?
Oh yeah, just everybody I think was affected by it, because I think people just thought he was going to get back. He was so young, he'd made such an impact in the short time, he was working so hard, and then out of the blue, almost, because we're obviously not privy to what's going on in his life, that's it, that's the end, he has to hang up his boots. And everybody just felt so sorry for him, because they wanted to see him back to what he was doing best, and unfortunately that's not going to be the case. But we do wish them all the best, and Ruby is an injury expert, so I'm sure if he ever wanted to talk to Ruby, he'd be able to as well.
I'd say he's sick of talking about injuries. But anyway, Stephen Ferris, thanks for taking our call.
RTE 2FM.
On
2FM with Green Farm. Get real with Green Farm's chicken and turkey range. Real protein, real tasty.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It is now time to turn our attention to football. It's a huge night of Champions League action, if I haven't mentioned it already. Liverpool taking on Benfica at 8 o'clock, and Manchester City and Atletico Madrid also at 8 o'clock. And to talk us through the action, I'm delighted to say that Mark Langdon of the Racing Post joins us. Mark, let's start with Liverpool-Benfica. We don't have a team yet. I'm sure it'll probably land very, very shortly. But of the two games tonight, the expectation is that Liverpool will probably have a little bit easier than Manchester City.
Yeah, I think that's probably because of Atletico Madrid's kind of reputation, probably more than actually their performances over the last sort of season. And so you just kind of expect sort of Atletico to put in that kind of stereotypical Diego Simeone, backs to the wall kind of performance that we've seen so often in the past. I would say that if they play like they have done for most of this campaign, then it's probably a similar level of game. But in terms of Liverpool, I think you're absolutely right to sort of say that they'll probably win the game. I mean, it was the tie that everybody wanted, really, in terms of that draw. Who did you want? You wanted Benfica. English teams have done very well against Portuguese teams already in this season's competition, particularly, of course, Man City in that last round against Sporting. Absolutely thrashed them 5-0 on aggregate. Liverpool have already played Porto, had their measure, and both of those teams are probably better than what Benfica are. Now, on sort of all known form, you would say that Liverpool should win and do it comfortably, but sport isn't played like that, is it? And you do get upsets, and you do get kind of, just teams raising their level, particularly at home. So that's why I think, actually, if I'm looking at it, I would say that Liverpool got the slightly harder game, because being away from home in the Champions League, I rarely think that that's an easy kind of obstacle. And, I think I'd say that Man City are more likely to put up a sort of wider margin victory over Atletico than Liverpool are against Benfica. And I'm just sort of going against that stereotypical Atletico. I don't think they're anywhere near as good as they were.
Even when you look at Benfica's form in the group stages, I mean, Bayern beat them 4-0 in Lisbon. I don't see your optimism for Benfica here. Liverpool have won, 16 of the last 17, 10 clean sheets in the last 13 games. They're going to hockey them.
Oh, yeah, Ruby. I think Liverpool will win. But away from home in the Champions League, Jurgen Klopp would take you know, a 1-0 victory all day long or 2-1 or anything like that. Just win away from home. It's just not easy in the Champions League. Benfica, you know, raised their level against Ajax and shocked them in the last round. I do expect Liverpool to go through, and absolutely right to point out that Benfica, you know, were outclassed by Bayern Munich in the group stage. I think they've come on a little bit since then. They've changed their manager. Jorge Jesus left the job. Very, I'd say, unpopular figure by the end. In their group, they did overcome Barcelona. I think that Barcelona had a lot of problems then. They're playing much better now. It's just, as I mentioned a couple of times already, it's just the fact that you're playing away from home in Europe. It's rarely that easy. I know Man City won 5-0 at Sporting in the last round, but it's not that, you know, that would definitely be kind of the outlier there. And it's just nearly always a battle away from home at this stage of the Champions League.
So you're Diego Jota, Luis Diaz, Salah, Mane, Firmino sitting in the dressing room this evening, and you're looking at taking on Otamendi and Vertonghen, who are both 34. Are you not thinking happy days?
You are, yeah, you absolutely are. I mean, what they kind of lack in pace, I suppose they make up for in experience and know-how. Otamendi absolutely is sort of front foot defender. You remember him from the Premier League. He's very rash, likely to give away fouls. Would be a bit of a surprise, I think, if he gets through the 90 minutes without being booked. Vertonghen, even at the end of his time at Tottenham, you could see he was struggling slightly. I think they'll look to protect those two, try to defend a little bit deeper and, you know, respect Liverpool. And even though Liverpool are away from home, they'll be kind of, you know, the onus will be on them in some respects to try to open up Benfica. There's one player, Nunez, up front for Benfica, who's definitely worth watching out for. He's the biggest threat, I think, to Liverpool's chances of getting through to the semi-finals. He's a striker that's been linked with a couple of Premier League teams already, but kind of, I suppose, maybe not the biggest Premier League team. Somebody like West Ham were linked with Nunez. I think he's probably got his sort of sights set a little bit higher than that, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was at a Champions League team next season in terms of one that, you know, could maybe fight in one of Europe's elite leagues. So Liverpool need to watch out for him. They've definitely got the quality to win the game on the night and win the tie overall. But I just think that actually Man City have got the slightly easier task because they're at home, even though on paper people would think it's a harder game against Atletico.
Yeah, and I'm kind of with Ruby on this one. When you do look at a Liverpool team, and it's just announced now, Alisson in goals, Alexander-Arnold is back, Konate, Virgil van Dijk and Robertson, then Fabinho, Keita and Thiago, and Mane, Diaz and Salah up front. It's really hard to look at that, and as Ruby said, look at a potential Benfica team and not see Liverpool running riot. But let's have a look at Salah. Today it was announced by the sports minister of Egypt that he intends to sign a new deal. Is he ever going to sign one, do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I still think he will. It's perfectly within his rights to try to get the best sort of deal for himself, you know, the most amount of money for the most amount of years. I don't really feel like anybody at Liverpool could begrudge him for asking for now, you know, really elite money, because he is one of the world's best players, despite what the Ballon d'Or list said. He's been so important for Liverpool in their sort of rise to Premier League champions and, you know, European champions. So I think he deserves the money. I can understand as well from Liverpool's point of view that you don't want to just bend over and just sort of, you know, because you end up with an issue there. If you bow to Salah's demands, how many other players then start, you know, wanting, you know, the same kind of money, and you can get yourself into some problems. I think the difference is that Salah has proven over the time that he deserves it. Yes, they're bringing in players, Jota and Luis Diaz, that, you know, maybe one day can sort of look to replace him and Mane in those sort of wide forward positions. But I think it would be a mistake for Liverpool to lose Salah. They didn't pay that much for him if you go back to when they signed him from Serie A. You know, so it's not like he's cost them an absolute fortune. They've had a bargain out of him so far. And if you do have to pay a little bit more, you know, to almost like a reward, really, for all that he's done. And I still think all that he can give to Liverpool. There aren't actually that many teams as well that that I think Salah would want to go to, really, above Liverpool in European football. There's maybe a little bit more money on offer at Paris, but most players that have gone there have been unhappy. Real Madrid seem to have their targets set elsewhere. Barcelona as well could be one, potentially. They seem to be trying to get their finances in order, and the sort of deal they've done with Spotify has kind of helped them, really, in that regard, in terms of selling the naming rights to the Camp Nou. But there aren't that many clubs, really, where Salah can go to. What I would say is I doubt that that anybody in Egypt would know before Liverpool. I mean, Salah's relationship with the Egyptian FA and sort of most people in Egypt, not the best, really. So I suspect maybe that there's just a little bit of guessing going on there, but it's probably hedging his bets in the right direction.
He probably is. And Mark, you were keen on the chances of Manchester City, but when you look at it, Pep Guardiola versus Diego Simeone, they've met three times, 2-1 to Pep. Big games, Pep can overthink it at times. I did enjoy his comment when he was asked about that earlier or yesterday evening, where he said he was going to play 12 players today. But
he hasn't, by the way. He's named 11.
Has he named 11?
he might have named 11. I mean, Bayern Munich played 12 players for 17 seconds at the weekend. So maybe Julian Nagelsmann also overthinks things. Look, he definitely has in the past made some pretty big calls in Champions League games that have ended up going wrong, and they've lost matches, Manchester City, that they shouldn't have lost. I think, if you go to sort of the Tottenham game and the Lyon game, they've been knocked out, not always by elite teams. If you go back to that game at Anfield when they were 3-0 down in the first half, he picked a very strange team. I remember that night where people couldn't quite work out, why he'd done what he'd done. I think maybe it was Laporte at left back. He certainly played somebody out of position at left back, and I think he rested or dropped Aguero. And when they went to Tottenham, he didn't play Kevin De Bruyne. So he's definitely done some odd things in his Champions League matches. I think what Pep Guardiola was trying to say was that, yes, he does overanalyse everything, but he does that every single match, and people only point it out when it goes wrong. More often than not, the kind of tactical calls that he makes are for the best of the team. It's not just picking names out of a hat. He picks players that can do the job for Manchester City, but also stop the opponent. So I'm sure he will have overanalyzed Atletico Madrid and been thinking about sort of how they're going to play against them ever since the draw was made, because Diego Simeone is the world's best. He's the best paid coach in the world, and he's somebody that pound for pound, as in terms of what he sort of got out of those Atletico players over the years, is extraordinary, really, to have won a couple of La Liga titles and have reached a couple of Champions League finals as well. This team this season, though, just hasn't played to that level. They've been beaten in most of their big games. They did raise their standard a little bit against Manchester United, I suppose, but I thought that was two really bang average teams, really, at the sort of the level we're talking at, Champions League last 16. They've got to play a lot better than that against Manchester City, because obviously there's a big difference between City and United at the moment.
But timing as well, Mark. You look at them at the weekend and they did play well. And Felix with two goals, Suarez scoring goals as well. Like, heading into this week, they're not in a bad place at all.
No, I mean, I think that the hope for Atletico, I think more than sort of this stereotypical, hard-working, well-organised defensive machine, I think it's João Felix is the best hope for Atletico. They paid over 100 million euros for him. It took him a while to settle, and I think that a lot of people, maybe even myself included, actually were quick to judge João Felix as a flop at Atletico, and wondered whether he'd ever actually kind of reach the heights that you should do when you're paying that kind of money. But we've seen in the last couple of months he's dragging Atletico forward, and that's what that's what the best players do. Even if the team's not performing to a really high standard, you as an individual can kind of get the wins and make the difference. And he's scoring goals, he's making assists, he looks a lot fitter than he has done. I mean, Simeone, absolutely, he flogs the guts out of those players on a weekly basis. You can't play for him unless you work so hard up front. I mean, Antoine Griezmann is the perfect player. It's why he re-signed him, because he does work incredibly hard for the team. But João Felix, I think, is learning what it takes to play for Diego Simeone. There are some teams where if you're the forward, you're allowed to cheat a little bit and, you know, just only work when you've got the ball. That doesn't happen at all at Atletico. And I think that the João Felix is getting fitter, he's getting better. And I'd love to see him play for Manchester City. I think he's got the technical ability, you know, to really thrive as the centre-forward of somebody like Man City. I think he'd be better suited to City maybe than Erling Haaland, who's been heavily linked with them. He's good enough to play for any team in world football. And if Atletico are to upset the odds and cause a big shock this evening or over the two legs, I'm pretty certain that João Felix will be the main reason as to why that happens if it does.
But is that attitude to work why there could be a lack of goals tonight? I mean, City will have a lot of the ball, probably most of the chances, free kicks, corners, whatever. But Atletico have only haven't conceded more than one goal in any of their last nine matches.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that they'll defend narrow, probably with a back five when they haven't got the ball. There'll be three midfielders in front of those that and not overly ambitious, and then the two forwards will kind of work back as well. So it's unlikely they'll get caught on the counter-attack tonight, I think it's fair to say. You know, City will have to be patient. An early goal would be absolutely fantastic as far as City are concerned, because that would, I think, just settle the nerves, because they have had these kind of Champions League jitters in recent seasons. But if they can get an early goal, that would settle them. If they don't score early, then it is going to have to be more of a grind. And what I would say is that I think that City are pretty good at being patient and, you know, just going through the process of what Guardiola wants them to do, keep trying to find space. And I also think that the fact that the away goal rule is not in operation, I think that plays more into City's hands, because Atletico would be the worst team ever to play against. When they scored an away goal, they would just shut the game down immediately. They would time waste from however early they wanted to, and they would play that way, you know, for 120 minutes. Where there's no away goal rule in operation, it's a little bit harder, I think, to do that, because, you know, that kind of nil-nil away from home doesn't, and sort of try and nick one, it doesn't quite work like that. So I would expect them to still play pretty defensively, but City can play with a little bit more freedom maybe than if the away goal rule was still being used in European football.
Mark Langdon, as always, thank you so much for joining us. Those games get underway at 8 o'clock. That is all we have time for. Ruby will be previewing Aintree on tomorrow's show. So the quiz winner as well, the competition winner, Benfica is the answer. They are playing Liverpool tonight. And the winner is Andy Lyons in Wexford. Tara Kumar is up next.
RTE
2FM.
On
2FM with Green Farm. Being up to 90 isn't real. The protein in our range is. Get real with Green Farm. Real protein, real tasty.